Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, my name is Boss Rutan.
Hi, this is Diego Lima.
This is Rodrigo Compredo, and you listen.
And you guys are listening.
So you are listening to the Verbal Submission.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Verbal Submission. I am your host, Brian Heminger, and it is Sunday, September 7th, 2015, sorry, and it's September 6th. Oh, my goodness, I'm all over the place. Anyway, we have an awesome show in store for you guys today. I'm the managing editor of MMAOddsBreaker.com, and I'll be joined momentarily by my trusty co-host, Jerry Rodriguez, and then in about 30 minutes, coming in fashionably late, will be Richard Highlight Perry. Well, we're going to be talking UFC 191, which took place last night. And then in about 30 minutes, we'll be speaking with upcoming Titan FC 35 fighter Austin Springer, undefeated 8-0. He's going to be battling Super Steven Seiler in a pivotal featherweight battle. Probably could be deciding the next title challenger in the Titan FC banner. And if Austin does extremely well, he could potentially just be getting a UFC call-up because, you know, moving to 9-0, beating a UFC vet, that's pretty good for you. But we'll be talking to him about all of that momentarily. So now we're just waiting on Jerry to hop aboard. Should be calling in very shortly via Skype. And in the meantime, we're going to be talking UFC 191. We had 11 fights take place last night, including the UFC flyweight title being defended by champion Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. He battled John Dodson and was victorious, looked terrific, won the last four rounds convincingly. First round was a little close, but just put on a clinic. Typical Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson type of performance. But without further ado, Jerry, my man. The myth, the legend, the background noise, Jerry Rodriguez. How you doing, man?
Good. What are you hearing in the background?
Oh, no, it's just like, maybe it's just my headphones.
It's the fan. I got to turn that
It's the fan.
On.
There we go. Yep. See, you gotta sweat when you're on the show.
I know.
I've learned. I used to have, like, a microphone that picked up every little thing, and... like, if I had the fans on at all, like, even just the ceiling fan, you would hear it in the microphone, just the air. So I had to sit there and sweat my ass off during every podcast.
Yeah, it gets really hot in the room here, so...
I believe it.
I'll have to make my way in a couple of minutes and turn it off across the room. But holy shit, man. What a disaster of a card.
You know what? I went and watched it with a couple relatives that are pretty decent in MMA fans, and I told them the real main event. I said, hands down, the true main event of tomorrow night is going to be John Lineker against Francisco Rivera. And that fight absolutely lived up to every expectation. I was so happy when I got to watch that fight. Like, it just made me feel so warm and happy inside. And that made up for anything else, honestly. It was that good. What did you think of Lineker Rivera?
If that fight was on the pay-per-view card, then I would have said people got half of their
money's worth.
Half of their money's worth. Because, yeah, that was an exciting fight, man. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. The pace, you know. And then it kind of looked like Rivera, you know, just kind of, he gave up, man. The choke wasn't that deep. I felt like he could have, you know, maybe defended it. But he took a lot of punches.
Beating.
You know? Both of those guys did.
Yeah. And freaking John Lineker has one of the craziest chins, too. I mean, these guys were winging punches. This was crazier than even, I think, the Leonard Garcia Korean Zombie fight. Because, you know, Leonard Garcia and the Korean Zombie, you knew that those guys, they threw crazy, but they don't have crazy power. With Lineker and Rivera, both of those guys could knock anybody out with one good shot. And they were throwing as wild and crazy and recklessly as I've ever seen.
what are they, 135?
Yeah, well, Lineker's normally 125, but he missed weight like four times, and Dana told him to go fuck himself and move up to bantamweight permanently.
Well, they should just have those two guys fight every, you know, every card.
Every card.
Every card, let them give each other brain damage. You know, at least you'll have one exciting fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man, it was absolutely bonkers. Like, I'm watching highlights of it right now. Like, I just have not stopped watching highlights of it. I could watch that all day.
Was that even 2 minutes? Like, it seemed longer.
But I don't think the fight at most lasted 2 minutes. Like, the crazy exchange. And the crazy part was they didn't even throw a punch or a kick or anything for, like, the first 30 seconds. I'm like, what's happening? I'm like, there's no way that they're just going to stare at each other for the first round. It's going to go down at some point. And then the second it did, it was about 30 seconds of insanity.
Do you think Francisco Rivera's looking back and saying, why didn't I use my reach? Why didn't I make him fight my fight, not go in there and
What is Francisco Rivera's fight, though? That's how he fights. That's why going to be so fucking awesome. Everybody knew that they were going to do that.
But you would think that he would throw a lot more leg kicks in there. I mean, he threw some.
He's not known for kicking. I mean, he's a guy.
The guy's 5'3". The guy versus 5'8". Yeah. Lineker's 5'3".
Yep.
He has no reach.
Yep. I know. Doesn't matter, though, because, like, Rivera isn't a guy known for being a technical boxer. He's not going to sit back and jab people to death with, like, Rory McDonald. That's not how he fights. He's never fought that way. He doesn't throw straight punches. He throws big looping haymakers. And so does John Lineker.
Just throw him in there. See what happens.
I would pay good money to watch John Lineker and TJ Dillashaw throw down.
I think he could beat Dillashaw if he came out that aggressively.
Well, the problem is that Lineker got wrestle-fucked by Ali Bagatinov at flyweight. So I think Dillashaw would just wrestle him.
Well, probably, but it'd still be fun.
Yeah. I mean, any time that anybody is going to choose to engage against Lineker, it's going to be an amazing fight. I've never seen one that wasn't amazing where they were standing and banging.
That should have been the card to kick off the pay-per-view, not fucking Paige VanZant versus Alexis Chambers or whatever the fucking name is.
Well, it was a strong performance. It was just extremely one-sided.
And first of all, I'm not buying the hype. You know, it was one-sided. She should have finished her in the first round. I mean, that was, just the odds. I mean, I think she was like +1,000.
You've seen Paige fight before. That's really not the way that she operates. She wears people down.
This was even in mismatches.
She wears people down. She doesn't have, like, one-punch knockout power. So she either makes people wilt and picks up a TKO when they just stop fighting back, like Kaylin Curran in her UFC debut, or she just wears them down to the point where even if they have a good ground game, they just give something up to make it stop.
Not buying the hype.
I'm not saying that she's going to be champion. I think she's good. I think she's really good. She's probably, you know, inside the top 10 definitely now. But, I mean, she's not going to beat Joanna. She's not going to beat Claudia Gadelha. But I think she could beat plenty of girls inside the UFC. I mean, they don't have to make them squash matches like this last one. I mean, everybody knew this was a joke fight when they booked it. But you got to credit Paige for taking it seriously and beating the tar out of this girl. I mean, that was as one-sided as it gets.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed. After a while, it was just the same thing over and over. It was boring.
Oh, I didn't. Well, I don't know. I like watching Paige fight, so I'm never bored She just has this way of never stopping. She does not slow down, and she doesn't stop throwing strikes the whole fight, like in any position.
I always like watching it. Throw her in there against John Lineker. Let's see how strong she is.
Throw her against John Lineker. You're a sadist.
Let's see how well she does.
What was the most
disappointing fight on the whole card for you?
Oh, hands down, Mira Orlovsky. I thought that fight was going to be over in about 2 minutes, and they were just, you know, going to be Travis Brown style of Orlovsky, and they were just going to be winging until somebody went down, and they never did. Like
Mir
basically
looked pretty big.
Oh, Mir was fat. He had a heaving gut, and
I thought he won. I thought he pulled
it was
out
close.
The first two rounds.
It was close. Mir got really tired, but I mean, you could give him the first two. I mean, he was controlling most of the clinch. He was in top position for most when they did go to the ground, and he was holding his own on the feet. Like he wasn't doing anything crazy, but like he would basically throw like a two or three punch combination and then enter the clinch. Like he wasn't doing anything stupid where he was just trading in open space constantly, because that would have favored Arlovski. I thought Mir had a pretty good game plan. He just, being so heavy, he didn't have very good cardio, and he got really, really tired in the third round. And he still dropped Arlovski in the third round, I think, but I mean, it wasn't enough to win in the round.
I gave him the first two rounds. I thought he did enough to win. But whichever judge gave the fight to Arlovski at 30-27 needs to get his license revoked or whatever it is. He should just never.
If they revoked every judge that had a bad scorecard, we wouldn't have any judges anymore.
Well,
although that'd probably be a good thing.
Start over.
Yeah. I wouldn't complain. All right. Okay, so for me, it was that fight that was the most disappointing. Did you have any that were more disappointing than that, or did I hit the nail on the head?
I think that's going to be everyone's disappointment for the night. But just think about this. If they had Lineker to start, and then they had Rumble as the co-main event, I think that changes the perception of the pay-per-view, you know, because then you have two really exciting finishes, and instead we got Mir and Arlovski for three rounds where they both looked tired. I mean, even Arlovski looked winded. And then Mighty Mouse, look, I'll be honest, I fell asleep after the first round.
That was the most boring round, I thought, the first. There was more feeling out.
Yeah, I passed out. I fell asleep.
Yeah.
So, but from what I've read, it was pretty much Mighty Mouse dominating and people booing. So, but the most disappointing fight of the night was actually right before the pay-per-view was Felder versus Ross Pearson. Because
I think that one was boring.
It wasn't boring. I mean, it definitely wasn't. But
I thought it would be more violent. I thought Felder would knock him out. But
it was a huge letdown because I thought that they would be swinging more. I think Felder has sort of topped out. I don't think that we're going to see him do any better. I mean, he had a big opportunity against Edson Barboza to sort of make his name at 140. He's at 145, right?
Mm-hmm.
155.
Who? Yeah, that was at lightweight.
Yeah. So I felt like he had a chance to really make his name there, and he just does this. Now he's just he wants to do the spinning shit all the time, you know, or just.
Well, it worked in one fight.
Yeah, and you know, kudos to Pearson because or whatever his name is, Ross, because he had a good game plan. You know, went to the body and he did just enough to win. So that fight for me was just kind of disappointment because I was expecting more from it. I wanted a bloodier scene than them hugging and him slumping and Rogan coming over to talk to him.
You got to give Ross Pearson credit, though. He put on a boxing clinic. He was landing good jabs. He was just outperforming Felder.
One of the body, he was mixing it up.
I thought Pearson was done after he lost to Evan Dunham. I was like, okay, he's on a serious downswing. But, you know, you got to give him some props. He brought it. And, you know, huge underdog, too, against Felder. I think Felder was, like, minus 400-something.
Should have bet on that one.
Yeah. We had some good bets last night, but we didn't get on that one. Yeah,
Who did you have?
We had Pennington. She was almost plus 200. And then Cody Anderson was plus 125. And then the easiest bet of the night, it was about even money. I think it was like minus 106. We had the under in the Lineker-Rivera fight. Under 2.5 rounds. So we're like, okay, you know, if the way that these guys fight, there's no way this fight lasts 12 and a half minutes. And we were right.
I should have jumped on that.
Oh, definitely.
So, what did you think of the main event?
I thought the main event was, you know, Demetrius Johnson doing his thing. And I'm a fan because he is so technical. Like, his biggest problem, though, is sometimes he's, like, he shuts down his opponent, but he's not able to dominate and put away some of the toughest guys. You know, Bagautinov, he dominated that fight, but he couldn't finish him. And then Dodson, it wasn't a complete domination. It was more, you know, the death by a thousand cuts thing. Like, he was landing great lead punches. He was entering the clinch and doing work in the clinch. He was, you know, working for takedowns, just trying to tire Dodson out from having to defend it. And, you know, by the end of the fight, Dodson was moving in slow motion, but, you know, he just couldn't put him away. So, I mean, it was a good performance. It was a clearly showed that he is head and shoulders above everybody in the division. Again, just like we all knew. But, I mean, it wasn't a star-making performance. I mean, the last time he fought Dodson, it was an amazing fight. It was a better fight the last time, but that was because it was more competitive last time. Johnson's just gotten so much better that he doesn't have to put himself at risk as much anymore.
Who do you think is next for him? Like, what makes sense?
Oh, there's only one that makes sense, and it's if Henry Cejudo beats Formiga. It's basically the winner of Formiga-Cejudo, because that's something fresh. I know that Joseph Benavidez is fighting Bagautinov coming up, but the winner of that fight doesn't deserve to fight for the title. So they'll probably put Mighty Mouse on ice until Cejudo versus Formiga, because neither of those guys have fought for the title, and they're both like in the top like five or six in the division. So it makes sense that they would be in there.
And then what happens? He beats the next guy, and then what, does he move up? Does he jump over and fight Ronda?
I don't know about fighting Ronda, but I wouldn't mind watching him, you know, champion versus champion, Mighty Mouse Dillashaw. I think that'd be a good fight.
Yeah, that would be pretty entertaining. Did Mighty Mouse ever fight at 155?
At 155?
Yeah.
No, he's only ever fought at 135, as far as I know, unless it was before the WEC. Because I think he debuted in the WEC against Brad Pickett and lost. And that was at 135. And I don't know if he fought higher than that before then, though. Probably not, though. He's not a very big guy.
He should make the jump to 145.
125 isn't enough? You know, drop a whole another weight class?
Well, I mean, he should go up to 135. But just for the hell of it, I mean, if he's going to keep the title, might as well, but he should jump up. I mean, at this point, he's done everything.
Well, the problem is he's not a huge guy. So, I mean, he's perfectly suited to fight at 125. They just need to build some more challengers. Right now, Cejudo would be really cool because that's a guy that's undefeated. He better win against Formiga, first of all. And he's a guy that's got decent boxing. He's a gold medal winning wrestler. He's undefeated. So, you know, he's got all the qualities that would make a fight that they could sell against Johnson as a formidable opponent.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. They could sell that. But let me ask you, if you took away the gold medal winning, I mean, would you be excited seeing him as an MMA fighter? Like, was he in Legacy or RFA?
Cejudo was in Legacy. Missed weight like four times and pulled out of a bunch of fights.
And even then, Like, I remember the hype. I never watched them fight and go, wow, this guy's the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they can sell that fight based on the fact that he won the gold medal in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really excite me.
Yeah. Honestly, the next guy that could potentially challenge him down the road is probably still over a year out. But it's maybe Ray Borg, somebody like that. I think he's a really fun, exciting guy in the flyweight division. I mean, he's not ready. I mean, he's still only like 21 or 22. But Maybe in a year or two, if Mighty Mouse is still reigning supreme, that's somebody that would make some sense. But he still needs at least two or three more wins probably in the division.
Yeah, there's just, I don't know. I just don't see anyone there that that's going to dethrone him.
Yeah, right now it's Cejudo, as long as Cejudo beats Formiga. And that's not a guarantee because Cejudo, you know, he didn't look that great in his last fight against Chico Camus. And I thought that was a fight that they made to kind of showcase how good Cejudo was. And, you know, he struggled a bit.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
And even like the sell for this fight was terrible. Like it was, they were really reaching. Like Dana White before the pay per view went on. Now, this is a different John Dodson. He's not goofing around. I mean, well, you would hope he's not goofing. You know, he's known for it. But I mean, if that's how you're going to sell it, then you're in trouble. I honestly, they shouldn't headline pay per view cards with. With guys at 125 or 135. Keep them on strictly on fight nights or FS1 or you know, the Big Fox shows as co-main events. Because just it's a tough sell, man. Especially when you have a guy that's so dominating like Mighty Mouse, and the fact that he's not putting people away like a John Jones would or an Anderson Silva would.
Well, you can't give Johnson too much shit for that. I mean, he finished three of his last four opponents in title fights before this last one.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I mean, what's his record? How many? He has 10 decision wins. And then he has 4 knockouts.
Well, he's never really been a big knockout guy. I mean, he has the one awesome one against Joseph Benavidez, but... For the most part, when he wins, it's you know, wears you down and submits you type of thing.
I don't know. I think they just keep those guys off for now. You know, it would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, you look at his title fights, and so far he's had 4 decisions in his title fights. He's had 3 submissions and a knockout. So, you know, only half of his title fights have gone to decision. And they've all been pretty, you know, entertaining. I mean, I would say the least entertaining was probably maybe the Bagotino fight.
The Moraga fight, even though he got the submission, I thought that was just one-sided. Moraga didn't engage.
Yeah. That was a bit frustrating. But, you know, Moraga, you know, he got thrown into the wolves way too soon for that one, too. I mean, he fought... His first two fights in the UFC were curtain jerkers, where he was the first guy on the card. And then his next, after he won both of those by stoppage, they give him a title shot.
Chris Carriasso is pretty...
That's kind of the state of the flyweight division, though, right now. So.
Yeah. I don't know about that flyweight division. Just not enough talent there.
That's very possible. All right, well, is there anything else you want to talk about from UFC 191? We really haven't talked about Rumble. We haven't talked about Blachowicz, or you know, maybe if there's something else that happened on that card that you thought was entertaining.
Rumble, holy shit. This guy, man. I mean, look, he's an asshole. You know, everybody knows that. But, you know, they keep hyping Ronda Rousey as, you know, Mike Tyson-like power. I mean, this guy charges. And, you know, if you don't wear him out and you don't grab a hold of him and make him use his energy and fatigue him, he's going to knock people. I would love to see him go out the same way he did against Cormier in the first round against John Jones. Because I think that's worth the price of a pay-per-view right there. I don't know. You know what? He does. He deserves a title shot after Cormier and Gustafsson. You know, I don't think Orlovsky gets it. But if you don't give him the next title shot, whenever John Jones gets back, I'm sure it's going to be sooner than later, you make that fight happen. You just have to. Like, you don't fuck around with giving John Jones a tune-up fight, or you don't fuck around and say, okay, John Jones is going to unify the title with whoever's holding the other. You just make that fight happen.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Johnson is know, he has his issues, and I think people, you know, now that he's got the reputation, people are going to start blowing every little thing out of proportion. So, you know, he can't, you know, he will not be able to redeem himself, in my opinion, with a lot of people. Like, he's just dead to them. And you know what? Screw him. You know, just keep going out there and knocking the shit out of people. That's how you win people over again. And, I mean, I know that everybody expected he was going to beat Anthony Johnson, you know, pretty easily, but he still went out, or that he was going to beat Jimmy Manua pretty easily, and he still did. So you got to give him credit where credit's due.
Oh, yeah. Look, I enjoy watching him fight. You know, the guy's a beast, you know. He's got killer hands. But that's why I'm saying you make that John Jones fight happen right away.
Mm-hmm.
You don't let him...
You want that to be the John Jones' return fight, or do you'd rather have John Jones fight Cormier?
No way.
Get the title again.
That's his return fight. That's what I was saying. Don't fuck around and make the unification belt. Let that be the return fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? They should have, just for the sake of it, they should have on the same card John Jones defend his title, and then whoever wins out of the Cormier and Gustafsson fight defend that interim title against whoever the next guy in line is, and then have it play out where the winner of those two fights meet each other in a future pay-per-view.
Now, you're like, assuming that John Jones is even going to be back.
He'll be back. What's he going to do, you know? Where's he going to go?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to leave all that money on the table. No way.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. So we'll see what happens, but definitely Rumble is, in my opinion, the clear number two guy behind Jones and Cormier in the division. So I want to see, like, if John Jones doesn't come back, what do you do with Rumble? Do you just have him fight the winner of Gustafsson Cormier, or do you, you tune him up again with somebody?
Oof, I would give him, who's fighting next? Do you have...
Rashad is fighting Bader.
Rashad is fighting. I'm not interested in seeing it. He's not going to fight Rashad.
Yeah, they're buddies. Well, you certain? You that certain that Rashad's going to win?
Oh, I'm not that certain. I'm just saying I don't think he would fight Rashad.
Yeah.
And I just have no. I'm not buying Bader as a top five heavyweight. He's mm-hmm. not a fucking contender. Like, people need to stop. He's not. You know?
Oh, I got one. I got a fight. Rumble Glover.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
There we go. Matchmaker extraordinaire over here.
I'm just afraid Glover would be too technical. And nah, I think he would. He's slowing down. I think Rumble would catch him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Screw it. Pull Josh Barnett and throw him in there against Big Country. That would be fun. Oh, he's a heavyweight, but I don't care. That'd be fun.
Oh, God, that would be awesome. It would be the heavyweight version of Lineker versus Rivera.
It would be. Because Big Country he throws those big shots and just mm-hmm. doesn't stop. But if you want to give him a fight that, you know, is just going to basically add another highlight to the reel, then I say you put him in there against Dan Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sacrifice Dan Henderson to Rumble.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Rumble will go in there and just knock his head off. but there's always a chance that he lands that H-bomb and, you know, then you have a brand new story that you can sell.
All right, well, I'm going to go get Austin Springer on the line, and while I do that, first of all, Highlight is back on the show. Richard, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
All right. You can bullshit with Jerry about whatever you guys want to from UFC 191, and I'm going to go get Austin Springer on the line. So,
okay.
Take it away, boys.
I have the perfect matchup for Anthony Johnson. And just hear me out. We need to see him fight Nikita Krylov if we're really ever going to call him the number two in the division.
Why?
Because Krylov is amazing, and he would push Rumble to the limit.
Where is Krylov even ranked?
He's not.
That's what I'm saying. I just fail to see how that would be. Are you serious? You think you would push him?
No, not really. No. I just wanted to have something to do with all my eat, pray, cry options.
Well, I think Dan Henderson's a good fight for him. I mean, there's a lot of fights you can make happen with Rumble. Bader or if he gets through Rashad.
All right, gentlemen. I hate to interrupt, but we are joined now by our first and only guest from today's show. He is fighting September 19th against Super Steven Seiler for Titan FC 35. Welcome for the first time to the Verbal Submission, Austin Springer.
How's it going, guys?
Oh, it's going real good, Austin. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about because, all right, first of all, I want to make sure I get your age right because I've seen it a couple things. Are you only like 23, 24 years old?
No, I'm 28 years old.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense because I saw something say you were 23, and I'm like, there is no way. This guy started in 2007. Like, he'd have to be like 16 years old. So that was like one thing that like stood out to me, and I'm like, that's not possible. Like, like with what this guy's accomplished already in his career, like it made me feel bad about myself. So,
definitely
28. That's a lot more reasonable. Okay, so, I want to know, you know, what was your path a little bit to Titan? Because you fought in multiple other promotions, even Bellator, and you know. Did you just have an opportunity, you know, maybe from training with Pat or something where they were just reaching out? I know you had some offers, but, you know, what was your path to get to Titan?
You know, I had a couple different options on the table, different contracts presented to me. And I kind of, you know, waited out as what made the most sense. You know, I have teammates that, I'm UFC Bellator World Series of Fighting, so I get a little bit of like the behind the scenes of the logistics of, you know, how stuff's ran and, you know, how they like it. And what I didn't want is I didn't want to be tied down for a long period of time in one company and not be able to go to the UFC when I get the call. And that's one of the things that Titan offers is the ability, you know, to springboard you right to that. I mean, aside from the UFC fight pass, like there's a lot of guys get pulled from Titan up to the UFC with, you know, very limited hesitation from Titan, and it was it made the most sense to go that route.
All right, well, definitely seems like it was the correct decision. Now, I want to know, you know, where does your drive come from? Because you've accomplished so much already with your career. You know, you're undefeated. You own a gym. You work with those guys. You train at another gym over with Pat on occasion. You're married. You've got two boys. I mean, you seem like a guy that, you know, is very, very focused.
Man, I love to compete. I think is what it really comes down to. You know, it kind of started after high school. I didn't reach the goals that I had set for myself. Stuff in the family life kind of distracted me. I didn't go off and wrestle in college like I wanted to. And I got into martial arts. And I loved it. It was such a more satisfying victory in a fight than it was a wrestling match or a tournament or a jiu-jitsu match or whatever it may be. And it was just, it's a lot of fun. And it's just really easy to stay motivated for something like that when you enjoy doing it so much. You know, and you mentioned, you know, the family and the boys and stuff. Like, it's such a great support system that I have that allows me to do all this so easily, which is my wife, my parents, my kids, you know, having my own gym, training another gym, it's just an amazing support system that I have built around me that really, I think, is an advantage that I have that a lot of people, a lot of fighters don't have, which I don't take for granted. It's pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I was wondering, how did you get started working with Pat Healy? I know he used to work at, you know, he used to work out at a gym, I think, that you used to go to a little bit, but... You know, how did you meet up with him? Because I know he's from a similar area, but, you know, different gyms, different areas.
No, we're actually, I have my own gym in Washington, in Vancouver. It's about 15 minutes away from the Portland area. Pat and I train at the same gym. I go to my gym a little bit, but what happens when I'm there is all the members come up to me, they want to ask the question, so I really can't get good, solid workouts when I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
So I outsource my training to a gym in Portland, which is Rose City FC, which is where Pat goes, Dave Jansen goes. The list goes on and on. And so I do the majority of my training there, so it's uninterrupted, and I can just focus on me and be selfish. And then I coach at my gym, and I do private lessons at my gym, stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the Rose City guys, we're real tight with them. I mean, we've had Pat on. We've had Dave Jansen on a bunch of times, Tyson Nam, Mike Pierce. You know, the list goes on and on. They've got a lot of talent over there. So it seems like they do, you know, what was it that drew you over there?
You know, you said some of the more popular guys, but I tell you what, there is a list of up-and-coming savages that, you know, a lot of them are fighting on Titan the same night as me. And, I mean, it's just a matter of time before their names are also household names with the Mike Pierce, Pat Healy's. And that, you know, is what's so great about that gym. I, you know, I was, had been training at my gym before I went over there, and I just, you know, you can't be a world champion and be your own head coach or have, you know, not the elite sparring partners, not the elite, you know, coaching staff. And, you know, so I upgraded my training, I guess is what you'd say.
Well, it definitely seems like it's paid off. I mean, your last fight, you took on, I would say, your most experienced and probably your toughest opponent yet, and you went out there and you took care of business. So, you know, did you just feel like that was the new training paying off?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been out there for a couple of years before that. It's just, you know, when coaching and even, you know, with myself, it's there's a certain type of confidence that comes from knowing you put in the hard work of knowing you've done everything necessary to earn a victory. And that confidence can't be faked. And I really felt like this last fight, there's different levels of fighters. There's, you know, there's guys that are entry-level pros, there's guys that are veteran pros, and then there's guys that are, you know, elite pros, whether they're, you know, new, old, West Coast, East Coast. And it just, I knew that I was on a different level. I knew that I prepared on a different level, and I knew that I was going to have a different level performance that fight. And I was able to essentially get, you know, a stop from leg kicks, which is no easy feat in itself. It just turned out that, you know, the coaches that I worked with and the game planning and everything, you know, all the pieces came together, and I got one of my best finishes.
Oh, yeah, it was just an incredible performance. Now, I guess moving on, we have a, you know, was getting that solid performance, did that give you that confidence to want to take on somebody that's got like a big name, like a Steven Seiler, a guy that's fought in the UFC? You know, did getting that win make you go, okay, you know, I'm ready for that step up?
No, I felt that way for a long time. It's just, you know, getting a record that puts you in a position to be offered or asked for a fight like that. You know, my skill level could be there, you know, as a 1-0 fighter, but no promoter is going to offer me a big fight like that as a 1-0, a 2-0, a 3-0, maybe not even a 4-0 fighter. You have to, you know, get those fights under your belt before, on paper, you know, an athletic commission will approve it. And, you know, for years, probably about a solid year and a half, 2 years, since right before my Bellator fight, like, I knew my skill set was good enough to compete at the highest level. It was just at that point now, okay, I need to rack up the fights to then, you know, show it on paper so that we can get those phone calls coming in. confidence-wise, skill set-wise, I've been there for a while. It's just now all coming to fruition.
Now, you haven't fought in over a year. Was there an injury, or were you just having a lot of trouble finding fights? I know a lot of good prospects, you know, they have fights just basically deconstruct right in front of them right before they're supposed to happen a lot of times when they're, you know, just starting to make a name for themselves.
You know, Sherdog doesn't have it listed, but I actually fought in March.
Okay.
At the same venue where this next fight is. It's on MMA.tv's records because the way the promotion and the Washington State Athletic Commission does is they report to the Association of Boxing Committee. Well, they report then to MMA.tv, not to Sherdog. So Sherdog has me at 7-0. MMA.tv has me as 8-0. So I actually fought this last March, but it has still been about 8 months or so since I last fought. You know, the Northwest has a ton of fighters, but, you know, to get guys, and I say this very modestly, not big-headedly, to get guys to take the fight with me, they would, there's a certain thing that guys will do, is they will say, oh, yeah, I'll take this fight, but I want this much money. And so what they're doing is they're essentially turning down a fight by asking for way too much money, so that way they don't get the reputation of turning down fights and being scared. They just go out and they say, oh, you know, I want $2,000 to fight, $2,000 to win. Well, you know, a local show's not going to do that. It doesn't make sense to them. They're not going to generate revenue off spending that much money. So a lot of guys would, you know, verbally commit, and then through negotiations, the fight would fall through because they'd want, you know, all of a sudden a whole bunch more money as the fight got closer. And so it took about 8 months before we could, you know, get a tough guy with, you know, a good record to step up and take the fight, and I was able to get that. Notch another one up on the victory.
Well, I really appreciate some of that insight. That's something that I never really think about was, you know, the way that people can kind of toy around a little bit with their reputations a little bit. So,
yeah, I
very,
don't know if
very
it's a thing up here.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys are very, like, even at the amateurs level here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of the amateurs are very picky. Like they, you know, they really want to have that undefeated record as an amateur. They really want to have that great record as a pro, which I understand. I mean, everybody wants that, but it, especially as an amateur, it should be to get better. As a pro, I can understand a little bit, but I mean, you don't want to be the big fish in a little pond. You know, I'd rather be a big fish in a giant ocean and, you know, really test myself rather than just, you know, beat a bunch of chumps along the way just to pad my own record.
Now, you fought at 135 and at 145 in your career. Where do you feel that, you know, if you make it to the biggest stage of it all, where do you feel you would probably be most competitive at?
Well, I actually fought 155 one time as well, but, you know, I can make 135. It's difficult, and it would definitely requires an IV. And with you know, the UFC's new protocols, those not being allowed, I don't feel that I will safely be able to make 135 pounds again. So what I'll probably do is I'll put on just a little bit more size, functional mass rather than just extra bulk, and I'll probably just settle at 145. I feel like, you know, I'm 5'8", which is kind of an average. For this fight, Steven, I think, is 5'10", 5'11", which is pretty tall for that. But, you know, the majority of the guys around that 5'8", 5'10", you know, I'm not severely undersized. So I feel like 145 pounds, I'm quick. I have my strength still and my stamina. And I feel like that's probably the best weight class for me.
Oh, excellent. Now, my co-host here had a couple things he wanted to know. First of all, he says he knows some people that handle the Sherdog records. He says he's going to reach out to one of those guys and see if he can get that updated. So hopefully we can get that rectified. See, you got to know people, so maybe that'll help.
Yeah.
And and then number two, he had a question. He wanted to know, you know, being a coach at your gym and then training at another gym, you know, do you feel like when you're coaching, that helps reinforce what you've been learning, too? Like, it's just like doubles down.
100%. I really believe that if fighters aren't coaching, they should, you know, volunteer at their gym or something, you know, at least once a week. Because what it does is it forces you to break technique down so extremely when you're explaining it that sometimes you say things or you explain it in a way that you're like, oh man, you know, I'm saying that, but I don't know that I necessarily do that. And it kind of makes you rethink it and refresh it in your own memory as you explain it. And I know for myself, like, you know, when I'm telling people how to, you know, throw their kicks and turn their hips through and pivot on the balls of their feet and, you know, turn their shoulders, as I'm saying it, it's putting it back into my own brain as well. Because, you know, there's been science that have said that, you know, visualization is about 90% as effective as if you actually do it yourself. So when you're sitting there explaining it and you're visualizing, you're essentially going through the reps then without, you know, actually doing the training, and it's extremely beneficial. And that's part of the reason. Like, I very well could just have other coaches run the gym for me, and I just kind of pop my head in every once in a while. But I like to coach for that reason. But, I mean, I also like coaching. But a large part of it is because I get to continually refine those techniques as I demonstrate and explain them along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what it's all about is, you know, you can learn something and knowing it is good, but, you know, where you get the chance to really perfect it, that's where it gets real important, because anybody can know how something works, but, you know, getting down deep down and breaking it down, that I think that's really where it starts to show off and you're able to use it against other people successfully in fights.
Exactly.
Yeah, because, I mean, how many times do we see a guy, you know, grab somebody's neck during a takedown and they have no idea what they're really doing with a guillotine choke? So, but, I mean, somebody that really knows what they're doing, I mean, they'll put that guy to sleep in seconds. So, all right. A couple last things I had for you here, Austin. First off, for the people that aren't familiar with you, how would you kind of describe your fighting style? So what can people kind of expect when they see you step in there against Steven Seiler?
Expect that I'm going to come straight forward. I'm going to put my fist in his face and put his back on the mat, and I'm not going to stop. You know, I haven't been in a boring fight yet, and I definitely don't anticipate September 19th in Ridgefield, Washington to start. So if you don't have Fight Pass already, sign up for it. It's, you know, the three title fight alone is enough, but the undercard, I think, is really going to surprise a lot of people. A lot of awesome talent on board, and I think it's going to be a good night.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, Steven Seiler, you know, he's a guy that's got a good name, but he's also had, you know, a history of a lot of trouble dealing with, you know, good wrestlers. Do you think that with your amateur wrestling background and then, you know, your focus and then the people that you work out with and train with, that you could have a huge advantage in terms of the ground game heading into this fight?
Without sounding, I want to sound confident, not cocky when I say this.
Yeah.
I think I can win this fight standing. I think I can win this fight on the ground. I think I can win this fight on the judges' scorecards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if along the way he starts to get the better of me striking, then yes, I can choose to take it down where I don't think he has that same option. I don't think he has the ability to take me down when I start to beat him standing up. And I think that's going to frustrate him. I think it's going to slowly chip away at him. I'm going to be able to get inside his head and win the mental victory, which will lead to winning the fight.
Yeah, that doesn't sound cocky at all. That's definitely confident. And I guess one of our last things that I always like to ask people when they're on the show for the first time, but do you have any kind of pre-fight rituals, whether it's, you know, just something, you know, maybe you like to get with the family, you know, a couple days before the fight and just watch TV or lucky shorts, special pair of underwear, you know, maybe you'll like somebody wrapping your hands a special way. You know, is there anything that, you know, kind of puts your mind at ease before a fight?
Not really, no. I'm not a very superstitious person because if one of those things doesn't happen, I don't want that to then be in my head.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a very laid-back, stress-free type of person. You know, even in the cage right up before we, you know, start, I typically have, you know, maybe not a smile on my face, but relaxed. You know, I stay very composed. And then, you know, obviously once the rep says go, it's a light switch is switched on, and then it's, you know, a different mode. But nothing really, nothing, no superstitions, no Nothing along those lines.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're one of these types, but the guys at the Rose City, they are really into visualization techniques, especially guys like, you know, Dave Jansen. And I was wondering, you know, if you are practicing visualization for this upcoming fight against Steven Seiler, you know, how are you kind of picturing success? You know, what are you thinking in your head when you're thinking about the fight and winning?
Just, I see it as a very similar to my Bellator fight. Bellator was, you know, at that time was the biggest stage that I had fought at. And I tend to shine the brightest under the brightest lights. I have my best performances when it means the most. And I see this fight as just a, you know, most people on paper, when they see my name versus next to his name, they figure Steven Seiler is going to win. I see it, you know, starting off as even playing field, and I'm going to start, you know, minute and a half, 2 minutes in, it's going to be obvious that, you know, I've been winning the round. You know, 4 minutes into the round, it's going to be obvious that I'm winning. You know, 8 minutes into the fight, it's going to be obvious that I'm winning. It's just going to, the tides are slowly going to get, the chips are going to start stacking on my side of the table more and more and more, minute by minute, until finally, you know, he doesn't have any chips left and my hand is raised.
All right, excellent. Well, last thing before we let you go, Austin, is do you have any shout-outs, trainers, sponsors, anything like that?
You know, I do. I have a whole bunch of them. Some of the ones off the top of my head, it's a quick list. I'll try and get through it fast. Karma Fight Gear, Vitality Chiropractic, Royals Barber, FOI Labs, Cuban Brewing, Rose City FC, Vancouver Elite Martial Arts, Hula Boy, Charboil, Ambiance Tam, Lunatic Tattoo. Gosh, I know I'm forgetting a plethora of them, but, you know, I post all of it on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. It's Austin Springer. Instagram is Austin Springer MMA. You know, go ahead and follow me. I do a bunch of clips of my training, sparring, hitting pads. A lot of really, really cool stuff to check out there.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you so much for stopping by the show, Austin. I really appreciate it. And best of luck against Seiler on September 19th for Titan FC 35.
Hey, guys, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. If you don't have Fight Pass already, make sure you check it out for these fights.
All right. Well, thank you so much for stopping by, and best of luck. And you have a terrific rest of your day.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right. Bye. All right, that was Titan FC 35's Austin Springer stopping by the Verbal Submission. Everybody's back. Jerry, Richard, you guys learn anything important there?
Yeah, well, I learned that he fought in Bellator. Who did he fight? Do you know?
I think it was on, like, the preliminary card. It was one of those situations where Bellator was in his area. Let me see where. Yeah, Bellator held an event in Portland when starting off Warren face Nick Kirk in the main event. And this was and you know what they always do is they always load up the preliminary card with some local fighters. And Austin was one of the guys. He faced Zach Skinner.
Did he win?
Yeah. Well, Austin definitely won because he's never lost.
Oh,
but yeah. But yeah, he won that one. And it looked like that was a fight that was made for him to win because the dude he was facing was 7-9 at the time. Uh-huh. So, but he won by decision, and he has, and then Bellator didn't bring him back, so I think that motivated him because he's won by stoppage every in his four fights since then.
I didn't even realize Steven Seiler was demoted to Titan FC.
Well, yeah, he got released after he lost, like, three or four straight in the UFC. And sure. And then he went to Titan, and he fought for the title against Dez Green and lost. So. Oh,
that's right, yeah. Yeah, he's falling off. I remember that guy looked like he had a chance of being something.
Yeah, well, after he lost three straight in UFC, and they released him, and he lost to Dez Green, and then since then, he fought outside of Titan, actually, and he's won three times in the first round on more of the local scene. So we'll see what happens. He's back at Titan, and looking to get back in contention, I guess.
Well, it's the typical crafty vet kind of recovery where you might not have the, you know, the skills you need to be at the absolute peak level, but he still knows enough to be dangerous to pretty much everybody, and you can snuff out a lot of not very experienced fighters just by being crafty.
Mm-hmm. Well, Siler didn't, you know, take it easy. I mean, he faced, you know, Brandon Hempelman. That's a pretty tough guy that had battled Marlon Moraes in World Series of Fighting. And then, you know, he's basically during this little win streak, he took on veterans. It was, I guess never mind. His last fight, he faced a guy that was 1-0. But the two before then were against decent guys. So I guess the last one was just a keep me busy fight because it was in August. He's fighting again already. So, all right. Any last things you guys want to talk about before we call it a night?
What about the Bellator Dynamite event?
Yeah, there's one thing. They released a press release. I know that they were going to have a ring and a cage set up in the same venue at the same time. So that way, you know, they wouldn't have to take something down and build it back up during the show. But I think the thing that was surprising the most to me is they're going to have, on the preliminary card, some fights taking place at the exact same time. They're going to have a kickboxing match going on during an MMA fight, like next to each other. That's got to be distracting.
How terrible are the seats going to be if you're on the other side of the cage and you want to watch kickboxing?
Mm-hmm.
They'll probably do it so that you have the opportunity to see both. Like when they do events, usually one side is open. It's where like the fighters come out. There's no one really sitting there. So I would imagine that's how the setup will be. The cage will probably be connected to the ramp. And I would imagine for the kickboxing, the guys are going to come out of somewhere, but you'll be able to see both, whether you're, you know, wherever you're sitting, right? Because that would make sense. You wouldn't have the cage obstructing the ring for the kickboxing fights and piss off a bunch of people. I think it's pretty neat. I mean, you're going to have, it's going to be distracting. It'd be funny to see a fighter stop and kind of glance over to see what the guys are doing next to them and then just get knocked out because of it. But I think that this is fun. I mean, you have a one-night tournament where anyone could win. I mean, I think that four-man, it's really a toss-up. I think it's going to be exciting to see Emmanuel Newton take on a Phil Davis and, you know, King Mo and who's the other guy? Leighton Vassal. He should win that one, you know. So you're going to have potentially Mo versus Emmanuel Newton, number three, or King Mo versus Phil Davis, which should be fun.
I really want to see King Mo versus Phil Davis. That's going to be a super interesting fight.
It's going to be super. It has the potential to be really boring, though.
I think what's going to happen is the wrestling's going to cancel each other out. And Mo is going to knock Phil Davis silly, but I'm not 100% confident in that pick.
Yeah, hopefully Phil Davis has improved the striking and comes out aggressive.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I mean, it's definitely going to be a competitive tournament. They announced the bracket. So who's fighting who now? Because before they didn't know.
Yeah, it's going to be Phil Davis versus Emmanuel Newton.
Oh, okay.
And then King Mo versus Linton Vassal. That's who's the other guy.
Yeah, that's pretty good matchups. So then the winners against each other. I think everybody's dream matchup is Newton King Mo 3, baby.
That would be fun, man. That would be. I think if Emmanuel Newton beats Phil Davis,
that would be crazy.
Awesome. Yeah, that would be pretty fun, man. And then, you know, have him go. That fight against Liam McGarry, I mean, holy shit. How he didn't tap out was unbelievable.
Yeah.
the guy was in pretty bad spots each time, and he has a ton of heart. He's a tough dude, and I think it'd be fun to see him go in there. And you know, just for the hell of it, have Tito beat McGarry, and then you inverse Tito, because you know he would have his head knocked off. Manuel Nunes would put him to sleep.
Yeah. Well, you know it's going to be champ Tito by the time the winner of this tournament gets their title shot. They got to battle
yeah,
Tito. All right. Anything else, guys?
The fact that we could have been watching Frank Shamrock versus Tito, you know, for a second time, and Tito said no and turned it down. That would have been a pretty fun fight. That fight would have made a whole lot of sense.
Did Frank actually ask to fight Tito in Bellator?
Scott Coker actually said it was all set. The fight was Frank had agreed to it, and they were trying to get Tito on board, and he wanted the title shot.
Oh, that's
so
hilarious.
The fact that Frank
would even want to with all his career injuries. Like, he could barely walk at this point.
Well, I think it would have been more competitive than what will, you know, than what the title show like will be.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. I think that's going to do it for today's show. Is there any last stuff you guys want to go over before we wrap it up?
Well, I got one thing I want everybody to check out. Somebody on Twitter did a really, really in-depth look at the Explode fight series and exactly how mismatched all the fights are. MMA Fighting did a kind of a more investigative piece on it, but this person on Twitter did a whole bunch of research and got and crunched all the numbers, and it's all available on a Google Doc. I just posted it in the chat, and I also just retweeted it on Twitter. It's super interesting to see just how lopsided all of the fights are. I think one of the numbers is there was one card where the losing side of the card was a combined like 1-129 in terms of win loss record. So it's really interesting to look and see exactly how bad Tomato Can MMA is. I didn't make up Tomato Can MMA.
I believe it.
Have that on the post in the Explode Fight Series cage.
So is that the thing you linked?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. All right. And I guess for me, I don't know if I've got anything really interesting for people to check out today. So what about you, Jerry? Anything that you ran into?
No, not today, man. Not today. Well, you know what? Actually, yeah, go read the Wells report. Fuck Roger Goodell. Fuck Wells. And thank God Tom Brady has been vindicated, and he will start against the Pittsburgh Steelers next Thursday, and he'll be there to watch the banner go up, and hopefully.
I got to give my piece on this, and as somebody, I love the Patriots, but the entirety of Massachusetts has been insufferable for like a week now. And I just can't wait until everybody gets it out of their system. Because you can't get in line anywhere for anything without somebody bringing it up to you. I'm really sick of it.
Well, you know what? I think everybody's sick of it. If Roger Goodell wasn't such an asshole and a shit commissioner, and if Chris Mortensen hadn't reported just completely wrong information, then this whole thing wouldn't have gone to court, you know? It's just crazy how this all played out. Meanwhile, you have guys that are beating the shit out of their wives, domestic violence, committing crimes, and they're getting fewer or as many games as they wanted to punish Tom Brady. So that, to me, that's the ridiculous part. So, yeah. Go check out Roger Goodell's Twitter and call him an asshole.
I'm sure he gets plenty of that already. All right.
Sure.
All right. We're going to try to get back at the regularly scheduled time of 6:30 p.m. next week. we'll see what happens with the first day of the NFL, like first full day. So that might make things a little interesting, but yeah, no. Max, same time. Oh.
No, go ahead, Barry.
Oh, and I was just going to say, same time, same place next week. And then big thank you to Austin Springer for stopping by the show, even if he is a dirty Seahawks fan. Yeah, that'll do it for today's show. So appreciate you guys, Jerry and Rich, for stopping by. You can follow Richard on Twitter at @hi_light. Jerry is at Jerry S. Bayunco. I am at Brian Heminger. Verbal Submission is at Verbal Submit. Check us out on Facebook. We got over 1,000 likes now, so that means we're really cool. And I believe
almost 5,000.
5,000? Holy crap. I don't even pay attention, so wow. And Richard, I believe there's a special time right now.
It's Kurt Angle time.
Oh, yeah.